You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Filmmaking Conversations with Damian Swaby. Listen to conversations with award-winning filmmakers, directors from the golden age of television, and creatives from the indie film community who continue to inspire the next generation of filmmakers. And now, over to your host, Damian Swaby.
Scott, how are you today?
Damian, how's it going, man? Good to do this again. Sorry it was so tricky to schedule and whatnot. Just a lot of interesting stuff flying around Los Angeles these days, you know?
I know. And I'm sorry as well. I've been all over the place in terms of us scheduling shoots and miss shoots.
Oh, nice.
And well.
Nice in theory.
Yeah. I've just been, doing so different things, but a lot's been going around. You're right. In LA, in Hollywood, in film, and all sorts of things going on. But you yourself, I would say, thank you so much for coming on again. You know,
really, thanks for having me, man.
You know, loved your short, and I love following on Twitter. You come out with some great tweets, man.
Thanks, man. A lot of bad ones too, you know, but that's part of the gig, and that's part of kind of what I'm here to talk about. Just kind of in these crazy, unprecedented times, we're, you know, with the WGA on strike, the DGA soon to follow, SAG soon to follow, this kind of, we're all in the fight of our lives all of a sudden. And so I just wanted to kind of go deep on process, on the creative process, and kind of just, you know, I don't know how much I can help anyone else out there, but I feel like I've gotten a lot of insights into storytelling and writing and you know, from doing it 20 years, I feel like it just kind of cracked open to me. And so I just wanted to come back on and just kind of go deep on that, and just kind of do like a almost like a state of the union for creatives of how we can, you know, just dig deeper into ourselves and keep doing the thing. So that's what I wanted to come on and talk to you about, man.
I like that, state of the union. That's very good. I like that.
Yes. Yeah, you gotta assemble Congress and the Senate and have a good talk every now and then, you know?
Nice one.
So yeah, man, there's three kind of big things that I want to talk about, and we can kind of shift and move. And of course, like, obviously I've thought about this stuff, but please jump in and ask questions and guide me. And, you know, it's your show and I'm just a part of it.
The floor's yours.
Yeah, cool. So the three kind of things that I want to talk to about are the idea of, number one, tending to your river as an artist. Okay. And then the elements that I think combine for good writing. I'll give you a hint. They're clarity, specificity, and ambiguity. And then number three, I just want to talk about swinging for the fences and taking the giant leap. And so I'm happy to kind of start wherever, if there's any kind of thought where, what you might want to hear, what your listeners might want to hear, or anything along that.
No, Scott, I want to hear what you've got to say in any order you want.
Awesome.
I know you've got some great stuff to say, so go for it.
Sweet. Okay. Yeah. Let's jump in the deep end. So, very recently, I finished this script that I think is the best thing that I've ever done. Excellent. And it was a big, weird, wild, nutty, personal project. And it was deeply intimidating to me because it was personal. And it's the first thing that I've ever really done that's personal to this degree. And so it was kind of this white whale that had been looming for a really long time. And I was really intimidated and scared to kind of take this project on because it felt so vulnerable or so naked. And if you're you know, if you're telling stories about other people, it's, you know, there's that gap and you have kind of that, that healthy distance to tell a story about yourself and make it not suck, which is the really, really difficult part, was a huge challenge and a huge undertaking. And I was really, I wouldn't say that I was stuck on it, but I was really slow going for a long time. And through this process of kind of, you know, gathering material and writing stuff, and a lot of it was just kind of, you know, this idea of going through like three failed relationships, right? So it's kind of like these three chapters, and it's LA and it's movies and dreamers dreaming big dreams. Yeah. And so I obviously had a lot to say about that. And so in the midst of kind of being stuck on it, I had done this, we'll call it a rehearsal, for like a, I was going to essentially do like a one man comedy show in my apartment. If you've ever seen like Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii.
Okay.
It's like a concert film where they're just playing in these ruins and there's no audience. And so this was in like the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of lockdown. It was like 6 days after January 6th. And for some reason I had written like all this material on Donald Trump. And so I just decided like, I'm just going to do this weird, almost like a Mr. Rogers sketch or something where I like walk in the door in a mask and then just like do this whole comedy routine to like these three cameras that would be in my apartment. And then I just leave and put the mask back on and off I go. And so I was working on this and I had it down, like I had written out and it was long. It was like an hour and 45 minutes. And I was trying to like memorize all this material. And so in trying to memorize it, I was just like playing it back and listening to it on headphones. And it just became like too big of a project for me to tackle. And so all that I had were like these rough drafts of the audio of me like rehearsing the project. And so it just like sat in a drawer forever. And while I was working on this script, there was just one day that I woke up and just kind of decided, I'm gonna fucking release that rough draft. Wow. And immediately, and it's polished sort of, you know, it's rough audio and then there's me, you hear me like kind of tracking back and forth and it's whatever, but it's me speaking about Donald Trump and the state of our country for an hour and 45 minutes. So I posted on YouTube and Twitter and whatever, and immediately got like dragged by like real comedians who had like a very valid point that like, you've never done 5 minutes of stand-up in your life. Why the fuck are we going to listen to 2 hours of it? And I don't have an answer for that, but in doing the big swing and taking this big risk and putting this thing out that I knew would kind of get some arrows in my back, suddenly I was off to the races and I finished the script that I had been toiling with in the course of like 2 months. And so I'm of the opinion now that writing and creativity and all this sort of stuff, it's simply just a muscle, and it's a muscle that the more you work it, the stronger it gets. And writing or creating or making stuff is a gateway drug to more writing or more creation. And so speaking about this kind of like idea of like your river as an artist, when people are stuck, right? Like when I was stuck on this project, you know, and if you've ever had writer's block, when you ask people like, what are you watching? What are you reading? What are you listening to? Most of the times the answer is just kind of like, well, nothing, I have writer's block. Where it's like, you get so stuck or you get so focused on what you're not doing that you forget to kind of like consume art, consume storytelling, consume media. And so I really think that like the best weapon against that kind of block is to consume, is to watch and listen and soak up the stuff that you love. And then it kind of becomes this thing where, and I even think that the creative process is maybe a misnomer. I think that the thing that I've learned very recently is that the creative process is not the creative process. It's a channeling process.
Wow. What does that mean?
So we can't, the idea that you're going to create something is this big, intimidating, tough thing, because it's like, it's almost like the Christian God where you just wake up one day and you say like, let there be light. you know, that it's like, how does, what, where do we go from nothing to the universe, right? And so there's a big intimidation of let there be light as an artist, because that is like this huge process. But it's the idea that if you're not, you're not really creating, because you're just borrowing stuff that's already out there, right? You're using language or images or human history or culture or whatever. So I really just think that you're, and this is what I experienced on this most recent script, which I'll talk about more. There's kind of, when you get to a beautiful place of almost like an ego death as an artist, you kind of realize like you're just plucking ideas from the sky and putting them in your work. And they're sort of yours, and you're kind of putting your own spin on them, but they don't really belong to you. They're just kind of like floating down this river. And the more that you kind of like watch things, listen to things, observe things, you know, like the healthier your river gets, and you can just start plucking ideas from it left, right, and center. And so that's where I really think that it's, you know, the creativity is kind of not what the thing is. It's really just you're channeling stuff. And if you look at like great works of art or stuff that you love, you know, as a filmmaker or musician or whatever, most of the stuff that's really, really great is like, it's not that it's so wholly unique. It's that it's like plucking from interesting things and assembling them in a cool or unique way. And so that was kind of the big thing that came down the pipeline with this recent project, of this idea that it's like, you know, if you can switch that mindset from I am, you know, I am creator, I am God, let there be light, to, you know, I'm just playing with house money, I'm here on borrowed time, and I'm just like taking and repurposing ideas that are already out there. What a weight off your shoulders, right? You know, yeah. Like what a different perspective all of a sudden. That just kind of unlocks that. I was talking to a friend the other day, and I just found out that he has ADHD. And obviously from the first 10 minutes of this conversation, you can tell that I do too.
No.
And so I was telling him my favorite like productivity hack that I've learned for writing. And normal brained people, I think, can try this too, and it works wildly well. So the source of a lot of writer's block, I think, is when you sit down and you say, I have to write. And there's something about that word have to, you know, it's like people are always asking like, well, do I have to move to LA to make movies? And it's like, no, do I have to, you know, it's like, you don't have to do anything, but if you'd like to write, here's how you can do it. So throw away the have to, and just sit down and, you know, okay. So normally when you sit down to write, your brain immediately gets distracted. You immediately start scrolling your phone, you're listening to music, you're watching TV, you're whatever, and then your kind of writing session is kind of kaput. So the better thing that I found to do, sit down, open up your notebook, open up your laptop, have your writing in front of you where you can see it, and then say to yourself, I am here to goof off. I'm here to fuck around. I'm here to waste some time. And if some writing happens, that's great. And if not, that's okay too. And then goof off, play video games, watch TV, scroll on your phone, do whatever. And then you'll find that within like 10 or 15 minutes, you'll accidentally get a really good idea. And then you'll go, oh shit, that's a really good idea. I have to write that down. So you'll stop your goofing off. You'll write the idea down. You go back to goofing off. 2 or 3 minutes later, you get another really good idea. You go back to your writing, you write it down. All of a sudden, 3 hours will have gone by and you will have been writing the whole time. Because instead of starting with the writing and then getting distracted into the procrastinating nonsense, you start with the procrastinating nonsense, you weaponize your attention deficit disorder, and then your brain will lead you to the work that you wanted to do in the first place. And excellent. Yeah.
So how did you come up with these ideas? Like, because I've never heard anyone say anything that you've just said. I certainly haven't thought of anything like that.
Cool. Trial and error, man. Like I said, kind of at the top, you know, I'm 37, and I think I started writing seriously at about 18. So I think we can round up and say that I'm about 20 years in. And, you know, there was like a Scorsese quote the other day where he was talking about his new movie, and it was sad, but it was beautiful. And so him that he just said, like, I feel like it's just opened up to me. He's like, I feel like I just now am starting to get, you know, this infinite medium, and that's kind of, granted, you know, it's funny to be 37 thinking like an 80-year-old, but that's kind of how I'm feeling recently, that like this stuff is so infinite and there's so many blockages, and there's so, our focus as artists, creators, filmmakers is often so wholly in the wrong place, that so much of your job is simply to just pluck your focus and place it where it should be. And that's on keeping the faucet on. And so when I'm tweeting dumb stuff, apologies to everyone out there who's reading the dumb stuff, it's not for you, it's for me. Because in tweeting the dumb thing, suddenly that makes my words, my art, my contributions less precious, right? And then because it's less precious, well, hey, why don't I put out 2 hours on Donald Trump and it'll get 100 views on YouTube and the world will keep spinning and my mom will listen to it maybe, and on we go. And so that's where I really think it's just been 20 years of trial and error with my weird little brain, and I can't trade it in at the shop for a different one. So I'm just going to do the best I can with mine. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing that I've learned about creativity recently, that this idea of the most important thing you can do as a creative person is surrender. And so many thoughts on this too, but so the most important thing that you can do as a creative person is surrender. And that is just simply, okay, so many film shoots in history, right? And you know, this is a whole different conversation, but like one day we'll talk about how weird the medium of directing is, right? Like you do all this prep and all this homework and you have this plan and you have this team of people and you all say, oh, this is a good plan. We like this plan. And you have storyboards and you have shot lists and you have a plan with a capital P. And the first thing that happens every day is that you walk on set and the plan is immediately screwed. Someone comes up to you and says, hey, that hold, the steady cam's broken. So what else do we got? And then all of filmmaking seems like you're just answering this question of, well, what else do you got? And so the beautiful thing about that is in that moment, I think as a director specifically, there's this beautiful thing where it's like the art or the film or the work is telling you what it wants to be. And your job at that point is just to listen. And so instead of trying to force it and cram it into this locker over here, you can just let it sit on this table over here. And so when I'm speaking about kind of this artistic surrender, and this also goes back to like writer's block, where like, you know, like there's a reason that all of our great ideas come to us in the shower, because no one is trying to write their script in the shower. You're just sitting there and you're just feeling the hot water on your skin and you're daydreaming about, you know, 10,000 things. And then because you've kind of distracted your conscious brain, because you've told it to start goofing off, I find that it'll often rebel and say, well, here's a really good idea for that screenplay. And so it's like a Chinese finger trap, you know, when you're, the harder you pull, just the more stuck you're going to get. But if you can just put your fingers together, relax, step away, that's when the good stuff comes in.
You've written the screenplay of your life. You've
got it.
A lot of people,
when you say that. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people can't relate to that. And a lot of people want to be able to relate to that. Tell us about this screenplay.
Yeah.
And why exactly do you believe it is the screenplay of your life?
Yeah, so it's really fun. It's called Our Lady, Queen of Los Angeles, which is the, in English, the Spanish translation of what the original settlers called it. And so the fun of it is that it gets, lots of writers in LA, bless their hearts, are always writing movies about their own lives. And charitably, all of them suck. And so my goal with this project was to try to write one that didn't suck, right? And so the way that I kind of approached that was this idea that by becoming so hyper-personal that I could kind of come back around and things would become universal again. And that the things that I was feeling when I was waiting tables on a rooftop bar, or getting fired from a writer's room. You know, like stuff like that was like, oh, I bet that other people have felt this too. And it turns out they have. And it turns out also that I think with this project in particular, and there's kind of a line of dialogue that's kind of this joke where it's like, it went so far up its own butt that it came out the other side. And by being so authentic and messy, and it's not, there's no back padding. There's no like, look at me in this cool life I'm living. It's all just like, here's a lot of shit that happened and you deal with it. You sort with it, you sort it out, you tell me what it means. And I, you know, there's enough in it that I'm telling you what I think it's all about, but there's enough in it that it allows kind of, you know, the audience to step forward and fill that gap. I was talking about this the other day with someone that this idea of leaning in and leaning out is a writer that like a lot of amateur writers will, you'll lean way forward, right? Your script will all just be information so the audience doesn't get confused, right? Yes. And then leaning forward and telling them all that stuff so they don't get confused, they kind of naturally like recoil and lean back and they're like, whoa, like, I don't, what are you doing? It's almost like dating, you know? It's like the more that you're kind of oversharing, the more that someone's like, oh. But if you withhold, if you're mysterious, if you just give a little information and kind of lean back, suddenly the audience will lean forward and go, wait, what's he doing? What's going on? And so that was kind of my approach here that I found like the more that I was telling them things and also not telling them things, and this is kind of perfectly, you know, we're into number two here, this idea of like the thing that I think, and this thankfully, luckily, graciously has been echoed back to me by a lot of sources who've read the script and have said wildly glowing, insane, nice things about it.
Rats.
Thanks, man. And it's been bizarre because normally you send out work and you get positive stuff and negative stuff. Mostly I've sent this out and people have said two things. They've said, congratulations and good luck with it. And that's kind of, it's like, they will tell me the stuff that they loved. And it's not that it's without flaws. It's that fundamentally the flaws became so hyper-personal and clearly there was an intent behind them that I think at a certain point, your flaws just kind of become your handwriting. And if you, you know, there's nothing that's ever been made is perfect, right? Apocalypse Now is not perfect. David is not perfect. The Sistine Chapel is not perfect. But the flaws, we don't care because we see them, but they don't matter because the heights are so high. And so I'm not saying that I did that, but I'm saying that that was the blueprint, that it's just like, I'm just going to go and do this thing. My buddy, who's a producer and we've worked a lot, he said this great thing where he was like, you know, like midway through your script, so director Scott, who's a character, will wander into frame and get in arguments with character Scott about, you know, who's more Scott or whatever. And so he said, my friend reading this was like, you know, there's a point in your script where you just like acknowledge that it's self-indulgent and absurd and bizarre, and then you just keep right on going. And he's like, I didn't know what to do with that because it felt like you just told me, you were like, yeah, this is what we're doing. And then you just continued to do it. And so I think that was kind of the thing or the energy that kind of like bound the whole script. And yes, so it's about three flawed three relationships that don't work out. So there's three chapters of three different women. And the first relationship, you kind of get the end of it. The second relationship, you kind of get like the middle when you're kind of with someone and you're kind of secure, but it's not, you know, whatever. The third relationship, you get like the start of it. And so, of course, by the time you meet the third woman, you're like, oh, this is where things are going to work out because we're in like a rom-com of sorts. And so this is going to be the girl where it's like it all clicks and then things just like immediately fall apart. And so then we're just kind of left with like, well, what's a rom-com where they don't end up together and they don't even try to end up together? And then it's just, we're just left with this guy and who the hell is he and what journey is he on? And those I found were really interesting questions. And it's kind of, the fun of it is that it's almost like a biographical film about a person that, you know, we don't know. And so there's kind of this suspense of, you know, because no one knows who I am, no one knows my story. So when you're going through it, it's almost like Fablemans or something like that, but you're like, I don't know the destination. And we know the destination of all these movies that have come out of these filmmakers who are kind of telling their own stories. But I think it's wildly interesting to kind of mimic that form from the place of like a complete unknown. And so that was kind of what unlocked the script. There's a very fun scene. It started as this small little indie film, right? Mm. Just these three chapters, these three women, just very, very small. And then I wrote this scene where, you know, I'm always like walking past grip trucks and you look at the grip trucks like a film shoot and you're like, oh, like I want to go there, you know, whatever. So the Scott character is like walking past all these grip trucks and a guy runs out in like a suit. He's like a studio boss or something. And in the same way that someone says like an airplane, like, hey, is anyone here a doctor? He runs out and he goes on the street. He's like, hey, is anyone here a director? And I raise my hand. I'm like, I'm a director. And he's like, what do you direct? And I'm like, well, anything like character driven stuff. He's like, yeah, come here. Just like come direct this one thing. And he's like walking me onto set. And there's this guy on like a gurney with like a megaphone and like a sheet over him. And he's like getting wheeled out. You know, it's like the director's like had a heart attack. He's got rigor mortis or something. And the studio boss is like, don't worry about him. He'll be fine. Just like come direct this one thing. And, you know, and he like whisks me past these A-list actors. And you know, whatever, and I like sit down in the director's chair, like it's like the Iron Throne, right? And there's like a spotlight on it, and someone hands me a cup of coffee, and they're like half almond milk, half regular, just the way you like it. I'm like, oh, thanks, cheers, you know. And I call action, they do the little scene, I'm like, cut, and I'm like, okay, I think we got it. And the studio boss is like, yeah, we got it. And then that same PA comes and lifts the coffee cup out of my hands, and then they're whisking me off set, and the actors are now ignoring me. And the studio boss is like, hey, that was great. Like, don't call us, we'll call you. And he like hops in a Suburban and pulls off. And I'm just left there to be like, hey, like, could I do that again sometime? And so once that energy kind of came into the script, where it was just like these very, very fantastical, absurd, lyrical and poetic kind of flourishes that were hyper real, if not surreal, if not just plain not reality. That's where things kind of shifted. And I was like, oh, I think that's the movie. And then these three relationships can kind of exist through that and around that. But I like that idea of that earnestness of, you know, LA big dreamers and what it's like to kind of walk around, you know, trying to traffic in your own imagination, as a teacher told me once. You know, it's like there's something about that emotional experience. And that became kind of the core of the script. And I think that is wildly interesting and not just like, oh, hey, I dated three people once and it didn't work out. And so that was kind of what the script became, and that energy kind of infused throughout all of it. So it just kind of became this really big swing. And I think the reason that it works, I'm hopefully going to say well. I think I can say well. I think enough people have said that back to me that I can say that now. Is this idea of that there's clarity in it, and there's specificity in it, and then there's very focused ambiguity. So just, you know, just clarity, I think, is something that in a lot of scripts you see. Things just aren't clear. You're just like, wait, what's going on? What's this? What's that? You're kind of in the dark. And I think smart writers are able to articulate what's clear and then what is purposefully ambiguous. And so in framing that, you're kind of giving a reader or an audience a blueprint or a map, because they know, okay, here's what I know and here's what I don't know. And so if things are clear, you're in business. If things are specific, so if you have these little like very, very specified details, there's a whole flashback. When I was a kid, I think the statute of limitations has passed, so I think I can say this. When I was a kid, I used to shoplift Playboy and Hustler magazines from Barnes & Noble. Oh. And I had like a whole little like bank robber MO of how I would go about doing this. And so there's like a flashback to that, where it's like a bank heist scene, but instead of stealing money from the vault, we're grabbing a Penthouse magazine from the top shelf and going into the men's room bathroom, pulling down the diaper changer, ripping out photos, and then stuffing them in my like US history textbook in my backpack and going out the front door. And so stuff like that, there's such a great specificity to it, right? There's the brand of the store. It's in Denver, Colorado in 1996, obviously pre-internet and all that.
Yeah.
And so stuff like that was, to me, that's like the stuff that I was like a little embarrassed about and a little kind of like, man, I don't know if I can quite own this publicly. The more of that energy that I put into the script, I think that stuff really resonated with people because there was such a kind of like joyful, like, you know, abandon to it. It's just like, here it is, man. And it's life, and it's life in all its messy details. And I'm not here to look cool. I'm not here to tell you that my life is unique or compelling or whatever. It's just like, here's some stuff that happened to me in Los Angeles, dreaming big dreams, you know, trying to find love, and here it is. And I think that kind of specific tone or energy or whatever, at least in the stuff that I've seen, hasn't really been done in that genre of like, I'm a screenwriter writing about my life in LA because I'm important. And so I think because I was kind of so afraid of the script becoming that, which would have been just disastrous, I think it kind of managed to not become that, thank God. And so the stuff that is really personal became universal. And the stuff that is really so hyper specific, people would say like, oh yeah, my brothers and I would sneak into our grandfather's cigar room and he kept Playboy magazines under the couch and, you know, whatever. And so it's like, so the stuff that I was kind of hesitant to include is a lot of the stuff that people have pointed to be like, that's great. That's, I love that. And it's funny and it's, I can see it and it's real. And you feel kind of the realness of it. And kind of my favorite thing about this whole project is that it's kind of walking this high wire act between stuff that's clearly fabricated and stuff that clearly like really happened. And so there's kind of this element that you have this instinct that, you know, a lot of it is rooted in truth and, you know, a lot of it is kind of made up for the sake of storytelling. And so it feels authentic, but not so loosey goosey that like, it's just a lot of vignettes. But it also feels like a coherent story, but it doesn't feel so focused on the story that it's telling that it's not without these kind of fun tangents and life, just the messiness of it.
So it's clear that you are passionate about this story. You're passionate about the script. You've got it done. It's close to you and it's original. What are the next steps?
Sure, we hope. Yeah, I mean, that's always the question.
Well, in your own words, it's not a script where it's like I'm the writer. It's all about my life, and I'm so important. And in that way, it's different from that. It's it says something else from what you've said to us. And
yeah, hopefully there's like an honesty to it.
But
yeah, so that's a great segue into where we're at here on, what is it, May 24th? May 25th, 2000.
May 26th in the UK.
May 26th, oh, there you have it, look at that. Oh man, that fries my brain. I can't start thinking about that. you're literally, it's a different day for you. People can explain that to me 10,000 different ways. I'll never grasp it. yeah, man, so here's the kind of beautiful thing about this project, because it's so nutty, because it's so wild, because it's so out there, the genius and idiocy of it is that I can't be separated from it as a director, because there's literally a character called Director Scott, and you can't really have someone else play Director Scott in the Scott movie and not have Scott do it. So that's kind of, you know, that's the madness and the genius is that it can't just be purchased from me and someone else comes and does it. So
makes sense.
The great thing about this strike that we're on is that it is the right fight at the right time. And you know, there's a lot of discussion about residuals and room size and all this. I'm of the opinion that this strike is entirely about AI. It's entirely about what the studios think AI can and cannot do. And it's entirely about creatives standing up for themselves in a way that's going to create value for them long term. So I've always had this weird sense with this project that it's going to go. I've never really felt that with anything else. And there's kind of these beautiful contradictions. You know, we were talking about creativity and channeling and all that sort of stuff. This is the only script that I've ever written in which I felt like there was a presence with me in the room while I was writing it. And, you know, I'm not religious, so I don't know what to call that. It felt like a muse or a guide or the movie gods or the, something, a past self, who knows. I've never felt that on any other project that I've written, even like a little bit. And in fact, when writers say that, I think it's bullshit. And so this time, because I'm like, no, you wrote that. You created that. It came from you. And so this time to be in that space of feeling like I was channeling, feeling like I was being guided, and feeling like the universe wanted this weird little piece of art to exist, I kind of feel like, to a certain extent, I've done my part. And the movie gods, they got to do a little bit more if they want it to get made. And so I'm happy to put myself out there, and I'm happy to, you know, take meetings and pitch away and do all that sort of stuff. But I have just this weird sort of Zen vibe about it of, it's like, in a healthy way, the least attached I've ever been to a project, which is, again, a very bizarre contradiction, that this hyper, hyper personal thing is the thing that, like, you know, if someone read it and said it sucked and it was awful and it was terrible and I should quit, I'd just kind of laugh and be like, okay, you know. But if someone said that about another script that I'd written, I'd be in bed for like a week with the lights off, yeah. You know, like, so I just have this strange sense, and I'm not putting myself out there, obviously, when the time is right and when we've gotten to the other side of all this, which we will. I'm trusting that the movie gods are going to continue to be complicit on its behalf, because I kind of have this sense that they've been complicit up to this point. And so it just kind of feels like I'm just serving at the pleasure of the movie gods. And if they want to continue down this path, I'm happy to go down this path. And if the conversation becomes, hey, this is weird, we can't make, you know, a 2.5 hour rom-com about a guy that nobody knows and whatever, what else you got? I have plenty of answers to the what else you got question. And so I'm just kind of trusting in taking this wild swing, in taking this really, really big, strange, bizarre action. And the thing that I found is that people are really open to it. And that, right, you know, it's so funny because everyone balks at the page count, which is absurd. And I would too. And then everyone loves it.
What is the page count? Sorry.
It's 182 pages, Damien.
Yikes. 100. I've never heard of that.
182 pages. And I think a lot of it's dialogue heavy. I think it's more of like a 2.5 hour movie. But it's got a lot to say. The other thing, there's a lot of white space on the page, and it reads quick. Thank God. So it is, again, kids, don't write 182 page rom-com coming of age movie about yourself, or do, just, that's the wild thing. And so more than any other script that I've written, and this is the thing that I've said, I think smartly, and every email where I've sent the script out, I've said, you know, it's a nutty one, it's a weird one. If you feel the need to abandon ship at any point, zero hard feelings. Just, you know, crack it open, start on page one, read as much or as little as you like. And 80% of the people that I've sent it to have read it, finished it, and loved it. The first page is like a little title page. It says, this is a small movie, but it's a really big small movie. And that's kind of the vibe of it. So it's very large in scope, and it has this kind of epic odyssey kind of feel to it. But it's also very intimate and grounded. And it's kind of like working in this space. The coolest word about it, my partner read it and said that there's like a really cool homeostasis to it, where everything is like coexisting. Nothing is like attacking other plants or animals for dominancy. It's just all this kind of like ecosystem, and there's just like a balance to it. Other people have described it as like something that's like hard to put into words, or it just has this sort of certain quality that they can't quite define. And so I think that's the thing where it's like, you know, and it's been bizarre. Again, Damien, 182 pages. You send that out, naturally you think people are going to say, oh, you got to cut this, you got to cut that, you got to get rid of this, you got to whatever. Almost no one has said that. Like, wow. One or two people have said that. And they even kind of said, you could shorten this, but dot, dot, dot. And that's the thing, is that because it's the whole point of it is this epic, nutty, weird, wild, big swing. So if you start chipping away a page here, a scene there, a character here, what's that in service of, right? It's you know, because the whole thing is designed to be on this big tapestry that if you just start fraying the edges, you're not really accomplishing much. So that's been the kind of cool thing where, you know, and again, it's like if ever there was a script that someone could hate, 182 pages, a self-indulgent script about the person writing it, you know, a LA movie, you know, a rom-com, a coming of age waiting tables movie, you know, all in one. It's like that to me, it feels like that it would be so easy for someone to be like, you could chop 100 pages out of this. Like, what are you doing? You know, blah, 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 blah. And so the fact that I haven't really gotten that down the pike, to me is incredibly cool. And again, it's like, you know, this is like, if you're giving advice to up and coming writers, don't write 182 page script about your own life, but also like maybe do, if that's the thing that's like, so, you know, writing the script was terror and it was horrifying. And I realized very quickly that if you're writing something about yourself, it has to be great. It can't just be good or decent or whatever. It has to be great with a capital G. And if it sucks, it's going to be the most embarrassing thing you've ever done in your life, because why would you even go on this journey? And so the thing that I found kind of on the other side of taking this really, really big, wild and nutty swing, is that the feeling that I have is just simply put, I can do it again and again and again and again and again and again. Cracking that project, taking that giant leap, has to me like leveled me up in ways that I can like barely even articulate, because what's on the other side of that, right? Like what project could I ever do that would possibly be like more intimidating than the time I wrote about like me in three relationships in LA trying to make it and failing? You know, so it's like there's just something about doing the thing that's like the project that you cannot ignore, you know, the idea that's like waking you up at night or just there and like taunting you. When you do it, when you complete it, when you type the end and get to the other side and beam it out, it's the same thing as sending those dumb tweets, right? You have an idea, you communicate that idea, you beam it out, and your muscle gets stronger. And that's all the process is. You're just keeping the faucet on. You're just keeping material coming out. And I think in a healthy way, the reception of that material, whether or not that material earns you an income, whether or not that material has a positive or a negative effect on your career, that stuff is not really your concern as an artist, I don't think. I think the concern is just to continue to keep the faucet on, to continue to work that muscle that is the channeling muscle, not the creative muscle, the channeling muscle, and just continue to do that. And yes, of course, you know, God bless managers and producers and agents and everyone who takes work and champions it. And that is a wonderful process. And we will all show up for that process with clear eyes and full hearts when it happens. But also I think it's like, there's a reason that those people have those jobs, so that you as an artist, you know, can outsource that you can let your team, your people take care of you. And your job is really to just focus on the art and just do the thing that you're deathly afraid of doing, because there's nothing on the other side of that. And that's, it feels like I kind of climbed this cliff and I'm just standing on top of it. And it just feels like, well, I climbed K2. I could go climb Everest. I could go climb Kilimanjaro. You know, it's like there's something about the act of finishing a thing that you were terrified to finish and pressing send on those emails and beaming it out, where I feel like, you know, in Mario Brothers, where you're like little Mario and then you get the mushroom and you hear like bloop, bloop, bloop. I just feel like I went like bloop, bloop, bloop. And there's really no other way to kind of articulate that. So I'm really here to just, you know, talk about channeling, being specific, but also allowing room for ambiguity and taking big swings as an artist. Especially Hollywood, man, they're good at taking mediocre ideas and lifting them up, but they also tend to take great ideas and kind of sand down the edges. So I think as artists, as creatives working in this, you know, very highly commercial field, our job is to present the biggest swing, knowing that our rough edges will probably be sanded down. And that's the process that we go through. And that's the fight that we fight every single day, whether we're on a picket line or on set or with our laptop at our favorite coffee shop. And so I have this, to me, this kind of clarity now. You're just tending to your river, you're just cranking out material, and you're just kind of like doing the work that scares you, and everything else is just noise.
Excellently put.
There you have it.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Big ideas that get sanded down. I've kind of noticed that myself, but I've never put it in the way that you have.
Yeah.
And I really hope you get this screenplay off the ground and we can see it. It sounds so original. I love the part of you playing Scott and Scott the director.
Oh yeah.
And I'm sure many people listening to this podcast will agree with me that this is not the normal average indie film story that a lot of us have heard, especially when it comes to a lot of people who write about themselves, which kind of happens more often than maybe it could in some ways. I just, you know, a lot of times, as you said, people don't take a kind of unique look into themselves that would propel people to think, I'm going to get the ticket or I'm going to stream it or whatever. But you've come at another angle, and the honesty that you have in it, the threefold relationships. Maybe one day we'll grab a beer. We could talk about that. I'm with you on those failed relationships.
Well, the middle one, I was 31 and I was dating a 42-year-old mother of five.
Whoa.
Yes. So that's act two.
What?
So you, so you can imagine where act three goes, right?
Can I ask where you met?
Yeah, we met at the Culver Hotel, and it was a bumble date, and it went excessively well, and it was
great. What was a bumble date? Sorry.
Oh, it's a dating app.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it was great, and it was just this fun little season, and it's a nutty little story, and it's act two now. So there you have it. She was going through a divorce, and her husband had joined a cult. So there's other elements in play.
That within itself sounds like a film.
Sure.
So a mother of five. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I never met her kids, but that was my next question. Yeah. No, that was always kind of kept separate. And I obviously was never tasked with being any sort of paternal figure, which would have had me running for the hills. So it was great. It was a really great, little time for a time. And so, yeah, that's act two.
Are you still friends?
No, we've kind of lost touch over the years, obviously, as happens, but you know, we wish her well.
Scott, I love that story, man.
Yeah, man.
Mother of five at 31.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. 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 Age gap plus different place in life. But, you know, it worked right up until it didn't, which is kind of the fun of it. And then writing act two is also the scene where he gets pulled into the film shoot. I felt like I had burned all my best ideas in act two. And I realized, oh, my God. Of course, act two, we're starting act three on page 105, I think. Also, kids, don't do that or do it. Wow. I don't know. And so then I kind of felt like I had, it's like Top Gun or something. I felt like I had fired all my missiles. I had called in all the troops. And then I just had nothing left for act three. And I had to just rally. And then everyone says act three is their favorite. And that's, you know, it's kind of the manic pixie dream girl to end all manic pixie dream girls. And just very fun, almost like long real-time dialogue scenes of people meeting and falling in love and it all kind of, you know, going to shit in funny and interesting ways.
Excellent. Well, Scott, yeah, thanks so much for coming on the podcast again. Really appreciate it. You know, the door's always open when you want to come on, man. That's for sure.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I guess just the last thing I want to say is just this idea of, like, I just really think, you know, the deeper you go into yourself, the deeper you can go into other things. And so I just always encourage anyone who's an artist or creative to just really do the thing that terrifies you. Take the big swing. And just, you know, the chips will fall where they may, and focus on what you can control and not what you can't. And that's
and
that.
I echo your thoughts completely.
Thanks, man. Thanks so much for having me, Damian. This was fun. I wish it could be more of a two-way talk, but thanks for letting me kind of dump out all the stuff that's been kicking around my noggin these last months.
No problem, man. I get to speak on this podcast every week, so I'm more than happy. And everyone listening is more than happy just to hear more of your voice, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, thanks, man. I'll look forward to that beer, you know? It'll be fun.
Have you thought of upgrading your cinematography game? Would you like to have an ASC cinematographer mentor you for free? Join veteran cinematographer Suki Medenzovic, ASC, Disney, Pixar, FX Networks, Netflix, American Horror Story, as he teaches you how to create beautiful images using three lighting techniques he has mastered on film sets over his 30-plus years in the film industry. Each technique uses basic, low-cost lighting equipment so that anyone can achieve beautiful visuals no matter your project's budget. If you want to take your cinematography to the next level, visit filmmakingconversations.com to sign up for instant access.